Welcome to Mystical Dispute, the limited Magic the Gathering debate podcast. I'm Garrett Gardner, a.k.a. G-Guards.
And I'm Carl Chase, a.k.a. Two Duck Cubed.
Today we're going to discuss Estwald Shield Basher.
Estwald Shield Basher is a 4-2 human soldier for 3 and a white. Whenever Estwald Shield Basher attacks, you may pay 1. If you do, it gains indestructible until end of turn.
My take? Normally one of us makes a use case for an unusual card. Not today.
My take is 4 drops probably shouldn't have 2 toughness.
Let's jump right into
Data Crunch.
What does the 17 lands data say?
Well, Garrett, I think you spent some time looking at the 17 lands oh my God, I almost said data.
You did say data. We're airing that. It's data now.
You poisoned my mind, and there's zero chance any of this gets edited out because you need to take the wins that you can get based on the recent history of the win-loss record on various things.
We'll get into that later, but I'll take my win now.
All right, fine. You get this win. Anyway, you spent some time looking at this data while I'm off gallivanting in constructed land.
Mm-hmm.
What does it look like?
Essentially, it's a pretty resounding terrible. It is the 4th worst game in hand win rate white common. And that's basically true across all the color pairs, even in white green. I think it's like the 5th last or 6th last in white green or something like that.
That's not very good.
So far in the podcast, we've only talked about cards where one of us really likes it. And I just thought it might be interesting to turn it around and talk about a card where we're debating the community because I see it being played a lot, even though it has these terrible stats. And it's not just the stats. It is also my experience that says this card is very bad.
While the text of getting indestructible while attacking is certainly powerful in a nutshell, there's just so many other issues that this particular card seems to have.
I mean, I'll admit early, I played this card and I thought it might be fine. And honestly, it was a little bit difficult to nail down just how bad it is. But I really do think that this card is bad. I think that leads us pretty quickly, though, into
Pulse Check.
Does the community over or underrate it at large? And yes, it's very overrated because I see it across the table a lot.
It's the 10th highest taken white common. Traveling Minister is the 8th highest taken white common. And that card is fantastic. So
right.
Even though Traveling Minister still is taken ahead of the Shield Basher, not by enough.
And I've been beaten by this card, which is I think why people are more keen to play cards like this, because they see it when it's good. But the overall win rate is pretty bad. So I think people are seeing it when it's good and ignoring it when it's bad.
I think the initial points are really straightforward. It's taken middle of the pack.
Yep.
It's got terrible stats. Experience backs up that it's been pretty bad for us. I think that leads us pretty quickly into
rank it.
When to play it and pick it and when not to play it.
This is the exact sort of card that I hate. Because this card will beat you. It has beaten me, and I even actually won with it, because when you're ahead, this card is actually pretty good. Having an indestructible 4 power attacker really closes a game out. But in this case, the data supports the idea that even though you can win with a card like this, it will still lose you more games on average than most other white cards that you could pick up.
Let's look at an in-game situation such as the following. Honestly, you could even be on the play in this spot. Say your opponent plays a 2-mana 2-2 and then a 3-mana 3-2. Honestly, even vanilla and no abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to turn 4 and you drop this thing. All of a sudden, your opponent's attacking you for 5 on the next turn, has 4 open mana. What are you going to do? You're going to block the 3-2? Okay, now you've traded your 4 drop for a 3 drop and you've lost the tempo advantage because your opponent still got the initiative. That's just a pretty ugly situation. I mean, that's with 2 pretty mopey cards. And it also trades for a single mana on Flame Blessed Bolt.
I think every single removal spell trades for this card, including 3 1 mana removal spells. The Flame Blessed Bolt in red, Piercing Light in white, and the black
The Vampire Deadweight. What's that card called? Nice limited podcasters here.
Gift of Fangs.
There you go.
I don't even remember card names anymore. I relate them to older cards. So I'm just like, the Deadweight.
Vampire Deadweight is fine. I think everybody knows what we're talking
Vampire
about.
Vampire Deadweight, yeah. So essentially, if you have any removal spell, you're probably trading up on mana if you even need to kill this card, which often you don't actually even need to do.
No, and again, because of the fact that it doesn't block when you play it on 4 mana, it's going to give your opponent the opportunity to get in for a bunch of damage and potentially put you on the back foot. And I think that is a theme that we've seen now pretty clearly clearly from four drops is your four drop needs to serve two functions. It's got to be able to attack, and it's got to be able to block the opponent's three drop. I mean, it sounds fairly straightforward, but if you look at other cards that didn't do a good job of blocking three drops, they tend to not be very good unless they're doing something else really powerful. A great example of this is Jaded Sellsword from AFR. I mean, you could create a hasty 4-3 first striker with that card with the treasure, but the failcase of it as just a 4-mana 4-3 obviously wasn't very good, and the stats reflected that. It was one of the lower rated red cards in the set. There's plenty of other situations like that. A 4-mana 4-3 that doesn't do anything just isn't a very good card in today's limited environment.
Yeah.
And a 4-mana 4-2
way worse,
that you need to be attacking with and doesn't have haste, is just quite a bit worse.
Oftentimes with cards like this, you can kind of see what the set designers were thinking when they put this card in the set. And I think here it's supposed to train your other green and white cards. It's supposed to be able to attack, you pay the one, and you pump up your other training creatures. But two things are bad with that. First of all, training I think is a little underwhelming. Like, you don't really want to build a dedicated training deck in this format. That's a good way to fail. And secondly, training cards naturally put you on the back foot because they are understated. Most of them, you would never play them vanilla.
Yeah.
You need to get that training trigger in order to get in. Now, there's some training cards that you probably would throw into your deck anyway, but I think overall, this card is a good litmus test to why training is a bit of a failure that you should probably avoid in general.
Agreed.
But this card will beat you, as I said before. This card turns you being ahead to you being way ahead, right? If you have board advantage and you can drop this and you can just activate it every turn, you're kind of in a good spot. But that's not the position in Magic that I ever want to focus on. I try to focus on board states in which you might be behind and you need to bring it up from behind. But I think this might be why people are more keen to play the card, because sometimes it just looks unbeatable on the other side of the table and it will bash your face in. And sometimes it'll even happen for you. But you need to focus on the times where you have to block with your 4-mana 4-2, like a 2-2 or something like that.
And I think there's also going to be some perception bias here as well, because if you're beating your opponent down and they've got the 4-2 in their hand or another option, they're probably going to take the other option instead. So you're going to see this card less often when it's terrible for your opponent, and you're going to see it more often when it's really good for your opponent. So it may feel like it's a little bit better on your opponent's side than it is when you've got it and it's stuck in your own hand.
Absolutely. I think this card is a perfect example of a filler card that you actively don't want in your deck. And oftentimes our episodes will focus on other cards that might be very edge case. Like, they're very unlikely to make your deck, but if they do make your deck, they will further your deck's agenda by quite a bit. And so instead of taking this card that looks like filler but actively is bad, maybe take one of those other situationally good cards that might not make your deck, but if it does, it'll be pretty good.
Especially in best of three.
Yes.
Take the Piercing Light over it.
Yep.
That may or may not make your main deck, but against a super fast deck, you're going to want all the Piercing Lights you can possibly get. Maybe even take the Adamant Will if you get a matchup that you expect to be big on combat. Don't take the 4-mana 4-2.
Don't take the 4-mana 4-2, which I guess is the advice that leads us into...
Instruction manual.
How do you play it, and how do people misplay it?
So this is a card that I just don't want to play it very often at all.
Yeah.
I can think of a few spots where it's got the potential to be pretty good. I think it does pair pretty well with Kindly Ancestor, because Kindly Ancestor takes away the Shield Basher's number one issue, which is that you're going to get on the back foot. If I play a 3-mana 2-3 lifelink and I trade for a creature with the block, then I play my 4-2, then my opponent bashes my face in because I played a 4-mana 4-2. And I drop the lifelink card in my 4-2, now all of a sudden I can start to gain some of that lost life back.
Right.
Obviously still pretty weak to Flame Blessed Bolt and Vampire Deadweight and other things like that.
100 other removal spells.
But at least it minimizes the downside of the Shield Basher.
Well, that's the exact combo that beat my face in a couple times that made me think, well, maybe the card is okay. But even if you have a bunch of Kindly Ancestors in your deck, I still would caution against playing this card, because like you said, there's just so many one card answers to this combo that that it just doesn't seem worth it. And I think the data reflects the fact that even in those cases, it's not pulling its weight.
I mean, you could also just play Kindly Ancestor and then pair it with good cards. That's an approach that you can take. So do that first. And honestly, if you're getting to a spot where you've got to play the Shield Bashers in your deck, something's probably not gone terribly right. I think there are absolutely spots where you've had somewhat of a train wreck of a draft. And in those particular spots, maybe it's okay to try to stitch together some more fragile combos, like a Kindly Ancestor and a Shield Basher that can still win you games, even if it's not the ideal thing you want to be doing.
Yeah, I mean, I like planning for when your draft is a train wreck. And I think that's particularly important with this format. There's a little debate about this, but I personally think it's a Prince format because there's just so many powerful rares. And so you might end up not having enough playables because you really want to play a couple extremely powerful rares that you picked up in white. And so you just might need the body, even if it is pretty bad.
Agreed.
But I think a lot of the time, if I'm looking at this card versus an 18th land in maybe a deck that doesn't necessarily need an 18th land, I'm kind of leaning towards the 18th land.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a perfectly rational thing to do, especially if the rest of your deck is pretty strong. It's better to just make sure you can cast your good spells than to add a marginal 23rd playable.
Essentially, I'm advocating that you just almost never play this card. But how people misplay it is also an interesting topic, because the card does cost one mana every time you attack to give it indestructible. I often see players paying that one mana and then not being able to follow it up with a normal curve out. Like maybe they have a four drop stuck in hand, they attack with this and it just destroys their tempo just so that they can get one attack in with a 4/2.
So what you're telling me is it's a two toughness blocker for four mana that stone rains you if you want to use it effectively on offense.
I mean, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's not really that surprising that this card is underperforming. And I don't think anyone's taking it that highly, but I do think people are taking it and playing it way more than they should be.
That's pretty clear from the ALSA data on 17 lands. To the community's credit, it has come down about half a pick and pick order since the beginning of the set. Mm-hmm. So I think some people are on to the fact that the card isn't very good, but that's still honestly way too high for a card that you probably shouldn't be putting in your deck. So we will have to see, G-Guards, if our podcast affects the ALSA numbers.
The mystical dispute effect. I can't wait.
I am not going to hold my breath.
Me neither.
Please, everybody listening to this podcast,
please, we're pleading with you.
Don't play the card, because we need to see that effect to feel really good about ourselves.
Yeah, don't just do it for your win rate, do it for us.
That's right.
Well, that about wraps it up. So thanks for listening to Mystical Dispute. But wait.
Bonus content.
Before we leave, we wanted to quickly update you on our card wager from preview season for Lantern Bearer. Do you want to tell everybody the good news?
Yeah, I would be happy to tell everybody the good news on this one. In fact, I can't think of anything that I'd like to do more. So we talked about the card. We talked about its potential uses. We hadn't seen the set yet, so we didn't know. Nobody really knows.
We hadn't seen Exploit yet.
There's a lot of things that we hadn't seen about the set. However, I believe that we both made a guess as to what would the pick order be on the particular card. Mm-hmm. Out of 19 total blue commons, I guessed that it would be the 6th highest common win rate, and Garrett guessed that it would be the 12th highest common win rate.
Yes.
And Garrett, do you know where it's currently sitting in terms of common win rate for blue?
Hold on, let me bring it up.
Would you like to inform our viewers?
I'm just pulling it up. Hold on, I can't remember exactly where it is. Hold on, Oh, it's first.
Yeah, it's number 1 out of 19. So your guess of 12.
And it's not just first. It's like first by like almost a full percentage point.
Yeah, it's first by a healthy margin. And that makes me feel great, because I was kind of wrong about it, but you were super wrong about it. And that means that I am the winner, and I love winning. Winning is great.
You know, if we can play Price is Right rules, we're both losers.
I mean, that goes without saying, regardless of this wager. But jokes aside, we both really didn't quite nail this one.
Yeah, but it just turned out, I think, that the format was a lot more kind to the synergy involved with Lantern Bearer. However, I'm still holding on to this. When we made the prediction, I said I was going to face a lot of people who played it too much. And honestly, this is anecdotal. I know we have the data, but I have beaten so many players who just played like 2 or 3 Lantern Bearers, and I was able to run them over.
Honestly, this is what makes Limited great. There's so many of these cards that look so simple, like, hey, it's a 1 mana 1/1. I should just cast my one mana 1/1.
Yeah.
And it turns out that sometimes that's not how you should play the card. Right? Right? You've got blood tokens, and a free 3-mana jump aura is kind of better than a 1-mana 1/1 that costs you a card.
Right.
So I think that people are still not optimizing it in their decks. I think they're playing it wrong. I think they're willy-nilly casting it in control decks and trying to beat down with it.
They're probably not chump blocking with it enough.
Exactly. And even just, yeah, holding it back to dissuade your opponent from attacking because you're going to be able to jump your creature on the crackback is a play that I don't think people are making enough either.
Mm-hmm.
So for so many reasons, I think this card might actually even be better in this set than its win rate shows.
I know.
Which makes your prediction even funnier.
I know. I'm digging this hole for myself because I'm essentially saying that it probably is a better card than the win rate reflects, and the win rate is really good.
Yeah, so your attempt to save yourself actually made it worse.
Story of my life.
We definitely need to do this again next set.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Currently 1-0 for Tuduk and 0-1 for G-Guards.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. You can check out our website at mysticaldispute.com. I'm Garrett Gardner. You can find me at twitch.tv/gguards.
And I'm Carl Chase, and you can find me at twitch.tv/TudaCubed, and also competing in this weekend's Innistrad Set Championship and hopefully not embarrassing myself.
You're going to win the whole thing. I believe in you, buddy.
Let's go limited players playing Constructed. I will try to represent the community well.
Take them down, man.
Let's go.
Shout out to 17 Lands with the Data. Please check them out, 17lands.com, and you can support them on Patreon. Until next time, stay chill.
Adios. I really want something that just goes bonus content. I just gave you 15 minutes of stupid work.